Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Hello, Jill. How are you today?
I am about 70% great and 30%. Satisfactory.
Okay.
No, I'm good. I'm excited to talk more. I loved our last conversation.
I was just going to say, be honest, tell me how much you've thought about that 70-30 in the past week.
Oh, it is like top of mind all the time, but in such a good way. Like I find that, I don't know if I'm using it the proper way, but like I definitely am giving myself more grace now. If the kitchen's not perfectly clean, I'm like, but don't you feel good that you took the time to relax? Like there was 70% cleaning activity and 30% Netflix and potato chips. So yeah, that's probably not quite what the shaman in Bali meant, but I do. I love the concept. I love the idea. For any listeners who have no idea what I'm talking about right now, go and listen to our last episode and you can hear about the 70-30. I don't want to call it the 70-30 rule.
But, I don't either.
I don't know, the 70-30 guide to a more expansive in life. Anyway.
Open-heartedness,
yeah.
I agree. I've thought about it so many times, and I've taught my yoga students, I taught it at two different presentations last week, so it's been kind of top of mind for me too. But I kind of wanted to follow up on that a teeny little bit because you brought up a super interesting point in that conversation that I've also thought a lot about. And it's what happens when we're at 50-50 or what happens maybe when we're at 70-30 on the other side, where maybe we're focused 70-30 weaknesses or 70% weaknesses and 30% strengths. Like, what do we do in those times?
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot about that in regards to this past year for me, because I think I mentioned in that last episode that anytime that I found myself at 100%, like just go, 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 everything's working, everything's like on the surface looking like it's functioning well, I didn't have to go very far before I found burnout. I know that operating at 100% for me has not always been healthy, but I've just kind of been thinking about this last year. And at the beginning of my divorce, I was kind of in that. I was like, go, 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 go. What am I going to do? I've got to be able to pay my bills. And I was doing all of these little knick-knacky things to keep myself busy.
Yeah.
And then I had heard a podcast on burnout. And in the podcast host was kind of funny, but she said, you know, if God gives you a year, take it. If God sends you to Bali, go. And I was just barely looking at that Bali trip, trying to decide.
Wait, she specifically said Bali.
Yeah, she specifically said Bali. My jaw dropped because I had just gotten to the realization that from June to December, I had had so many no's. Like every job I applied for was either the silent treatment or a no. Everything just looked like it was just a whole bunch of no's.
Yeah.
So in early January, I kind of was thinking like, maybe I just need to rest. So that's actually when I heard this podcast and she said, if God gives you a year, take it. If God sends you to Bali, go. And my heart just, I just felt so much at peace. Like, this is it. I needed a year. God gave me a year and I took it. Mm-hmm. And he's sending me to Bali. I'm going to go. And I had been in a pretty heavy, intense stage of just burnout and nervous system friedness. But I think it really dawned on me in Bali how much we need to take time to just pause and savor and sometimes sit, like let the dust all around us settle. And I think that so often, especially if we're in big life transitions, I think so often we keep just pushing ourselves to get out of the messes, you know, or we push ourselves to get out of the chaos, or we're so used to the chaos that we distract ourselves with busy work.
I was going to say, I'm like, I'm going to pretend this chaos is not here right now. And do everything I can, like, we're fine. Look how well we're functioning. We're doing all the things.
Yeah. So I kind of just wanted to follow up from last week, see if you have any experiences like that, where you've busied yourself to the point of just more chaos, or even what's your experience with taking time to pause?
Well, I just want to, I definitely have a story to go with this, but also I just, like, it just hit me now that all of the things that you have gone through over the past several months, and things that seemed like doors closing or doors not opening, how awesome that those things didn't happen.
Yeah.
To lead you on this path to Bali. And I just had this conversation with someone else the other day that I said there were different points in my life. They asked what was the most eye-opening thing about writing a memoir? And I said, having to look back on my life and look back at the things that I thought were the bad things or the unfortunate things, and realizing the role that they played in either the knowledge or the tools or the life experience that I needed that served me so well later in life. I don't know. It's just beautiful to me how things work out sometimes. And I think we judge the hard moments so harshly. You know, and then again, it's like in hindsight, sometimes you can look back and say, like, wow, that's why that happened. Yeah. It all makes sense now.
I was just telling my daughter, her and I just got back from lunch, and I was telling her, had I gotten the first job that I applied for and got and started teaching full time in August of 2022, I can almost guarantee I would have lost the job or sabotage the job by January. I was not ready for a full-time job with the way my heart was managing, like my nervous system was managing life at the time. But I had just enough yeses that kept me feeling like I was a grown-up, you know?
Yeah, there was still momentum, you know, it's just like a slow roll. So
slow crawl.
Yes. So as far as my pause story goes, and again, I imagine that there are going to be a lot of women and anyone socialized as a woman and perfectionist who can may be able to relate to this. When I was going through the hardest point of my divorce and coming out, you know, we were still homeschooling the kids. We were still running a small business together. I had a lot of responsibilities on my plate at that time. And I used them as a tool, almost as an excuse to try and ignore the things I didn't want to deal with in my life. I kept myself very busy with everything, 100% working from sunup to sundown, doing all the things until I hit that burnout point. And I was reading books like The 4-Hour Work Week and Slowing Down to the Speed of Life. And I remember saying, if there are all these books out here about how we don't have to work so hard and still survive, I wonder if I can do that too. And then I reached the point where I was like, I have to just stop. Like, I am fried. I am 100% crispy. Serve me up, salt me, I'm done. And so I made a personal commitment to myself. It's not something I publicized at the time. That I was going to do the bare minimum on everything. So, and I know that sounds terrible. People are like, well, how do you do that as a mother? How do you do that as a business owner? The kids got fed. They got their bath when they needed it. The business, I did what had to be done for the business to continue to function. The bills got paid, you know, the doors got unlocked. But I realized when I committed to myself to only do what had to be done, that pause is what helped me kind of sift through what had to be done and what was all of the extra stuff that I was adding to my plate just to feel productive and busy, but more importantly, to distract myself from the things that I didn't want to deal with. And it was awesome. It was a necessary pause that life kind of forced me into. And then at the same time, I was able to come out of it and say, this is what really matters.
Yeah.
And this is where I want to be spending my time. And you know, at the time it did help a lot with the doom scrolling, all the time I used to spend on social media saying, I'm doing research for work. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that I don't know, I guess I see this from two different perspectives, because I can definitely see it from like the mindfulness type, the mindfulness practice and mindfulness research place, where we don't need to have these big, massive pauses in life. Like, we can take little mini pauses throughout the day. But I think, kind of to your point, a lot of people who are socialized for success, so let's even pull out of the socialized as women or socialized as mothers, but people who are socialized for success. And so the metrics of doing well in life are measured by quantitative things. How much money do you make? How many hours a week do you work? How many organizations have you joined? How many sports events do your kids go to per week? Like, it's almost this status symbol to have more and more and more on our plates. And even in that, I've heard so many people say that if you're going through a life a big life transition, or your family's in a crisis point, or you're in either active trauma or recent trauma, all of that busy work is just more of a trauma response. It's your brain trying to keep everything feeling chaotic, because chaos has become your safe place. So a lot of times we automatically try to stay busy. It's our brain's coping mechanism to feel safe, but we have to get to a point where we can retrain our brain to feel safe in the simplicity of life, in the quiet moments of life. And so I think, like, it's really important to ask yourself why, like you said, it gave you permission to sift and sort, but ask yourself, why am I doing all of these things?
Right.
Why am I working this hard?
Yeah. And for what? So you can say in conversations, oh, I had a 16-hour work day yesterday.
Yeah.
Which, yes, I love, you know, there was like some weird twisted amount of pride. And it's funny when you list all the quantitative things, like, yeah, we use it almost like it's this really strange brag of like, feel sorry for me, but also how amazing that I just put in so many hours and so little sleep. Fascinating.
I was just talking to somebody the other day that said that their work environment had been so stressed for so many years that it had become the normal for their daily meetings to include like high-end emotions and even swear words. And I was thinking, that's not normal. Like, we don't go to work to be in conflict and to argue. And if that's like the normal work environment, like, imagine that person that is used to that for the work environment, then when they come home, they're actually going to create chaos at home because that conflict feels normal for them.
Yeah.
It's taking that time to pause and like put things down. And there is no normal in this world, but is this the way I want to function? Is this the energy right. I want in my home, in my life, in my family, in my workspace?
Yeah. I think that's a great question. Does this feel good to me? And is this what I want?
Mm-hmm.
And really, if we have to ask ourselves that question, it's a great, I don't want to say like behavior adjuster, but there are definitely times where it's like, is this how you want to feel? That's a question I get from my life coach. Is this how you want to feel about this? Very interesting. And absolutely, I can see how that work environment would spill over into all aspects of life, whether that's a family or just a personal relationships or however.
Yeah. I think, again, it goes to that concept of the trauma, the too much, too fast with too little resources. If you have one situation in your life that is in crisis or in trauma, and then, like I said, you set yourself up to this status where fight and flight feels comfortable because you've had to make it comfortable in your work environment or your family environment or wherever.
Yeah.
You bring that everywhere you go.
Yeah. What I love about that too is I actually just recently read a blog by one of the top executives at a corporation that I work with. And he mentioned the fact that his team has, not that it's been easy, but they have very intentionally put much more strict boundaries around their work hours. Because everyone kept saying, you know, I'm feeling like I'm getting close to burnout. Everyone was kind of waiting for the permission to not have to work the 10, 12, 14 hour day, to not feel bad if they didn't crack open their work computers or look at their work phone on weekends. And so the leader at the top had to full stop with his team and say, we're no longer sending any emails after 6 p.m. It waits till the next morning. You don't send emails over the weekend or text messages or any, like, there's no communications that are going to happen outside of regular work hours.
I just had somebody send me an email that I loved. So her, you know how you can do the signatures at the bottom?
Yeah.
Her signature at the bottom was, it is common for me to take the weekend off and to spend one full day reading your email before I respond. Please give me 2 days or something like that. But it was very clearly a boundary. When I asked her about it, she said that because of the way that her children operate their lives, she does send emails in the evenings, but she wants people to know that she doesn't expect a response back. Mm. So she's sending them with the intention that others won't. But I love that. Just the idea of saying, okay, we're going to set some parameters around this belief that we have to be on all the time, right? Whether it's we don't send the emails after six or we have a culture of 24-hour pause before we respond.
Well, and the other fascinating thing that it did for his team, no, the cool thing was after they implemented this, they kind of reflected back on it after several months and realized that their team, by forcing the pause button on evenings and weekends, that their team had actually become more efficient and happier because they had to have their work done by the end of the workday. Oh, they stopped the dilly-dallying. They stopped picking up the extra tasks that weren't really useful or helpful or valuable. They had to reevaluate their day and say, okay, what matters? What doesn't matter? And then when it's done, it's done. And now I can pause and be with my family. So yeah, I thought it was awesome. And I do love that there are leaders doing that. And I hope more people start doing it. I think we need to stop this gerbil wheel of constant production and realize that we can actually be better in what we do with the pause.
Well, this is probably a lot more of a vulnerable share, but I was actually thinking about calendaring for families. You know, a lot of times I'll say I did it, but I know a lot of women who are moms do this, but you're trying to calendar, you know, all of these things that your kids have. You're keeping track of kids' pianos and recitals and sports and dinner and lunch and work and all these things. And we're working so hard at organizing these calendars to fit everything in. But one of the things that I noticed when I was thinking back on that 70-30 is the times when I was very intentional about putting play into my calendar before activities. That's the times that I was most healthy. It's when the chaos in our family's life increased significantly was when I was finishing up my PhD. I was still trying to work 20 hours a week, and I was also trying to apply for jobs. And I was still trying to do all the stay-at-home mom stuff that I had been doing prior to all of that.
Wow.
And one of the things that was the first thing to go was, in order to keep up with everything, there were very often times that I ended up with Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as my writing days. My ex-husband worked Monday through Friday. So our traditional trajectory was he worked Monday through Friday, and then we played or did, you know, house stuff or went on dates or whatever on the weekend. But when I couldn't get my stuff done and had to start working on the weekends, we lost play in our family. And it was a pretty quick, it was pretty apparent pretty quickly that that was a bad thing, that we weren't scheduling into our busy lives rest. We weren't scheduling into our busy lives the pause. And the more conflict and chaos we had in our home, the more that became normal and the less that we played. So I'm not saying, you know, we can't be busy in our lives, but I think we have to be intentional about the busyness.
Yeah.
So that we can be intentional about the stillness as well.
Ugh, I just made a whole calendar for the week where I could identify all the gaps I had open to fill with more stuff. And I think I'm going to fill them with play. I think that's going to be my or nothing. I mean, this, like,
yeah,
holding space to literally do nothing. There's nothing on the calendar and it is going to stay that way because it's blocked out as a nothing. I think that's going to be my goal going forward. I really like the idea of intentionally working in pause to our schedule. Let everything else accommodate around it. Okay. Let's we need that.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you know how this experiment goes, everyone.
Well, and kind of keep in mind that it might be uncomfortable for the first little bit, right?
Like 100%.
It's not normal. And your kids might even go, wait, where's the busyness? I don't recognize this spare time.
Mom, you're sitting? We didn't realize you could bend at the hips. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm already feeling slightly anxious about it, but like, well, what could I be doing with that time? No, I want to see what this feels like. I think this is a great idea. I'm so curious if our listeners will try it too. I would love to hear if anyone else starts scheduling in pause time, play time, non-work time.
Yeah.
How does it go?
And there doesn't have to be a rule. I was just getting ready to say, don't make it playtime like Disneyland.
Right.
But I actually don't like when people try to define play because you know what you need, but maybe take 5 minutes at the beginning of the day. Look at where those gaps are and ask yourself, ooh, do I want to play or do I want to rest?
Yeah.
Pause.
Love it.
Savor.
Yeah. I feel like we're going into a big, you know, like you had your big God pod episodes for a while. Those were big and a lot of emotion, a lot of feeling. And I had my book episodes and those were a lot of emotion, a lot of feeling. And now we're like, we're all going into chill mode now, friends. So stick with us as we continue to chill and figure out how to be more chill.
Chill and flourish.
Yes, there we go. Chill and flourish. I love it.
Okay. Well, I hope you have a great week and I hope you're feeling good during this time of pause.
Thank you. I hope you have such a chill week. And I will talk to you again soon or maybe not. No, just kidding. We'll come back. All right.
Bye.
Have everybody. A great day. Bye. Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveinthequeue@gmail.com. Until next time, Q Crew.